Hello and welcome back. Oh, I did my voice crack then. Welcome back.
Out of the way, you. Hello, everybody. Welcome. It's me, Ethan McKinley, and welcome to Was It Worth It? We've been away for 3 months. There's been ups and downs. There's been highs and lows. My girlfriend kind of left me and got me fired from my job. But
stop it.
That's a story for another, for another podcast.
Stop it.
However, like Bruce Wayne, Christian Bale's Bruce Wayne, I have climbed out of that subterranean prison in the middle of nowhere in an empty land full of huts and goats. And I come to you now as your host of Was It Worth It, along with Toffer, the producer, of course, of the show. How are you, Toffer?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. But what you've just done is you've just annoyed me again. you brought up everything that annoyed me about the Dark Knight Rises. How the fuck did Bruce Wayne get back into Gotham?
I'll look into it. yes, we are back to review films, of course. We had a bit of a break. I was obviously very busy, and Toff has been very busy. Christmas came and went, and we are here with you now to do a year in review, where we review the top 10 films, or at least our top 10 films of the year, of 2017. Mm. Not a good year for me. Not a great year for films. Well, some films are good, but there was a lot of terrible films, and it culminated at the end of the year with a very bad film, in my humble opinion. Ryan Johnson, not to give the game away. How are you, Toffer? Welcome to your show.
Yes, hello, Ethan. Thank you for joining me again.
Thank you for having me back on.
Yeah, you're welcome, mate. You said that there's been a lot of terrible films. Now, a lot of people that have said this, but I say 2017 is the year of, yeah, it was all right.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm looking at a top 10 now, which is on Empire's list. At number one, they've got Get Out. Two, they got Blade Runner. Three, La La Land. Four,
fuck Blade Runner.
Moonlight. Oh, we're going to have a fight. Number five, Death of Stalin. Number six, Dunkirk. Number seven, God's Own Country. Number eight, Logan. Number nine, The Handmaiden. And number 10, Call Me By Your Name. Now, I've heard of most of those. I've seen half of them. But that's the state of affairs at Empire's website, empireonline.com.
Yeah.
Where does one even begin with this? How was the year for you in general, Toffer? Have you made any New Year's resolutions? Are you going to do anything exciting? I know what I'm doing. I'm starting a stand-up comedy course on Monday, which you were meant to do, and you didn't.
But I'm far too tight to pay the money for.
Secretly, in the back of his mind, folks, he is obviously regretting it now, because I think you do need to do this at some point, because I think it's in you to do it, and I think part of you wants to. You need to get over this weird, oh God, I can't talk to people thing.
No, it's not that. It's just I don't like spending money.
Well, this might be an investment, I feel.
Mate, I've just spent £285 on a washing machine, and it like hurt my feelings. The only reason I paid it is because we need a washing machine. But like, it still took me 10 days to go, oh, fuck it then. I'd have happily kept washing clothes in the sink.
Well, he is a Jew.
I am. I'm a quarter. So, but yeah, other than that, I've made a New Year's resolution that will hopefully help this show out. I want to watch 100 films that I have never seen in 2018.
So
it's 2 a week.
Yeah.
Because I'm shit at watching films. Like, this is the idea of this show, because I flick a lot, and like, I don't...
That's what his wife says.
I'll want to watch a film, and I'll be like, yeah, I'm definitely watching a new film tonight, a film I haven't seen before, and then I'll get on Netflix, or I'll go on fucking Sky, and I'll just keep scrolling, and I'll see films that I've heard of, and I've been told are really good, but I'll just go, oh, nah, and I need to stop that. I need to just go, fuck it, I'm watching this film, nothing's going to change that, and then just put it on. So far, I have watched two brand new films this year. I'm going to try and do at least 2 a week, but I'm going to maybe get 3 or 4. We'll see how it goes. But the other day, I set out to watch a brand new film. I was like, yeah, definitely going to watch a new film. It's 2018, I'm in. And then I ended up fucking buying It off Sky. I'm watching that for like the fourth time.
The original one?
No, the new one. They released it on Sky on like early release.
That's bad to put the phone down.
So yeah, I ended up watching It again.
Does it hold up still after the fourth viewing?
Oh, mate. Oh, what a film.
I just didn't...
That is standout film for me of 2017.
I don't know how they're going to actually do the second half. I don't think there's any way out of it, but we'll sure see. So, hey. So what's the form and function of today's show, Toffer? What do you want to... How's this going to work out? Are you going to show me yours first and me show you mine?
Have you got 10? Because I did 5 and then I did a load of other ones. Because I've got 5 that are like, yeah, definitely. They weren't difficult for me to write
I have
down.
Got 5 I loved. 5 I yes. thought, 3, 4 I thought was so-so. Just, yeah, pretty good. That everyone raved over. And then 5 I fucking hated. No, 4 I hated.
Yeah, okay, we'll do that then. Yeah. We'll do top 5 that we loved. We'll do 3 or 5 that we're like, yeah. And then we'll do some that we didn't like.
All right.
That sounds good to me. Ethan.
Yes.
I don't think we need to do any other housekeeping, do we? I think we should just jump into this.
Yeah, no, please do. So you want to start at number 5 of the best or the worst?
Should we start with the worst?
I was going to start, with the best. Because you're going to get more vitriol and drama from the worst.
Start with the best. Go on, mate. Start with the best.
Okay, so my 5th film that was my favourite film of the year in terms of... I always mark a film up on, like, when I finish watching it, it stays with you. You think the acting performances are good, the execution of the special effects, if there are any, the theme, the subtext, all that stuff. My number 5 favourite film of the year. Well, let's say it's a bit of a tie.
Okay.
Because I put this on the kind of maybe pile because everyone went crazy for it. And then I saw it, I was like, huh? Okay, it's good. My favourite film, number 5, is War for the Planet of the Apes. Kind of tying, but just behind it, I'd say, is Logan. Didn't quite get all the love Logan got. Mm. And War for the Planet of the Apes, everyone kind of overlooked and forgot about, really. But it was, like, amazing acting. The special effects were just amazing. The CGI apes were, like, completely, like, realistic and amazing looking.
Is this the Woody Harrelson one?
Yeah, the one with Woody Harrelson. Yeah, him.
Okay. I haven't seen it, but I watched the James Franco one and really enjoyed it. So I don't know why I've stopped watching it.
Because James Franco put you off.
I really enjoyed it, and I thought it was a great film. But I think something just put me off watching
the second one, Dawn, is amazing as well. I think Dawn's probably better than War, but no, I think they're very good. I mean, obviously held up by the amazing special effects, the CGI apes. I mean, it's one of the reasons... Special effects man Rick Baker, who did American Wolf in London, one of the films we've actually reviewed on this show.
Yeah, boy.
Has retired, basically, because it's now, for the most part, I think if you get the right team together or the right CGI company, I guess, to do it,
yeah,
you get amazing results. Yeah, I don't know. War for Planet of the Apes is amazing. I think Dawn is better. I think if you watch Dawn, you'll be blown away. It's they're really good films. I mean, the first one... I think is good. It was a kind of interesting step in the right direction. It was a bit of a goofy concept, the intelligence gas.
Which one's this one?
The first one, the one you've seen with James Franco, and it was odd seeing James Franco in that, as it was seeing him strangely in Alien Covenant.
Yeah, for like 5 seconds or whatever he was in there for.
For 5 seconds in his little cameo. But yeah, I don't know. It seemed like an odd casting choice to have him in there. But him notwithstanding, I thought it was a really good film, and especially... where the story went and where they've built on it, where it's got to. It's kind of like a complete trilogy now. And if you like, it plugs in some way to the Charlton Heston original.
Do you? There you go. Go on, do it again.
Heston, the apes. Nova, the doll said mama. Ah. Love you, Ralph.
I do enjoy that impression. You're good, you
know, you like the impression? Charlton Heston likes the apes. This new trilogy doesn't start Charlton. Why? Because I'm dead. I'm working on it. It's getting better. But yeah, that's my number 5 favourite film of 2017. I think, I'd like to see if they do another one after this. Yeah. I think they can keep making them. But I guess where do you take it at this point? I mean, it's really a kind of a grounded story in some terms.
Did
that the apes
end?
Just evolve and that's it. It does end, and it has a very definitive end to it. I just think now, unless it becomes like a goofy time travel, time loop concept, which is what Planet of the Apes, the 5 films from the 70s became,
yeah,
which I like on a wholly different kitsch, schlocky level.
I like the Mark Wahlberg one.
That one's all right. I mean, everyone kind of shit on it at the time, but I think, again, Rick Baker, to mention Rick Baker, he did the apes in... the Tim Burton Planet of the Apes, one you're talking about right now. He did all the kind of the Tim Roth and Paul Giamatti and Michael Clarke Duncan. He did all the ape makeups in that, which I think are still pretty good.
Yeah.
But the apes in this one, I mean, like the CGI is really good in the first one. Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. I mean, what is it? Rise of the Planet of the Apes. But like, and by the time they get to the second one, it's just flawless. And the fourth, third one is even more amazing. So I don't know. Mm. Let's hope they do a fourth one. I think they can. It's got legs. I mean, you would have thought they can't make a prequel trilogy out of the Planet of the Apes films, but they have, and they've been very kind of clever socio-political commentaries like the original films were in their time. So, yeah, top five.
There you go. I will watch them.
What's your, or do you want to do my five and then yours, or do you just want to do your fifth?
Let's rally.
Okay. On the same subject of monkeys, my fourth favourite film of 2017, even though everyone said it was shit.
Hang on, dickhead. I said, let's rally back and forth. And you've just gone, yeah, fuck what you just said. I'm going to keep talking.
I thought you said rally ahead.
No.
All right. What was your fifth favourite film of 2017, Tover?
Fucking hell. Well, if I did this list 2 days ago, number five was Split.
Okay.
But I've recently watched Brawling Cell Block 99. And because it's a very recent film, I think it's unfair to squeeze it on the list.
Right.
But it's very, very, very close. Have you seen Brawling Cell Block 99?
No. Is this Vince Vaughn film?
Yes.
That I keep seeing in Tesco's for £7. Is it really?
Oh, it's tremendous. I went in completely cold, like not knowing anything. I was like, Vince Vaughn in a fucking... Like, I knew it was... All I'd heard was it was a bit, you know, it was a bit gruesome at times.
This is what I thought, because I see it in Tesco's all the time now, in, like, the £7 video aisle.
It looks like a shit film, doesn't it?
And it looks like a shit film. Vince Vaughn's trying to break out. And in those aisles, as everyone knows, there's, like, a million shit films. I saw one the other day with, like, fucking Ben Kingsley in.
Yeah, they all do him. They all
that you've never heard of. They like this. I don't know, like, what these actors, they must only, like, they must get paid, like, £1 million or dollars.
Yeah.
And then most of the budget is low, so that just goes on the rest of the film if they can. And like, you see all these like giant A-list people, not that Vince Vaughn is, sorry, Vince.
Is it Aaron Eccleston?
Aaron Eckhart.
Yes, he loves that. He loves a straight to DVD, he does.
I Frankenstein.
He loves it. He's always in Asda in that shit aisle.
Yeah, but that's the thing. But like you said, I'm looking at it now. Udo Kier, Don Johnson's in it, but it looks like a piece of shit. Said that, though, and to back you up, it's from the writer-director of Bone Tomahawk, something I've recommended to you and the listeners to watch.
Yes. Would you say Bone Tomahawk's gruesome?
Have you seen it?
No, but would you say it was gruesome?
It is at the end.
Apparently, it's more so than that.
Okay, because this is a horror western. So, yeah, I'm interested. Now I've seen the director of Bone Tomahawks in it. Nothing else swayed me. The Vince Vaughn thing, I was like, oh, God, Vince is trying to branch out. Stop it, mate.
The only thing that's a bit shit, he's got a bit of a shit accent. Like, because he talks like a cowboy.
Okay.
But it's slow, but it's like cerebral.
Right.
And it builds, and, like, you're invested, and, like, you know, you know where it's going, but, like, he takes his time to get where it's going. But then once it gets there, it's like, fuck. It's full on and it's horrible. It is. I couldn't watch all of it because I had to. Like, it takes a lot for me to not want to look at something and to grimace. Is that the right word? Grimace?
Yes, he's the character from McDonald's. He's the purple milkshake, I think.
He is, yeah.
I only found out that was what he was a couple of months ago.
What did you think he was?
Just like a blue thing. I mean, there's a Hamburglar.
I don't know. In the marketing department, they're like, oh, let's make a blue thing.
Well, why is the top of his head not squared off? Like, he's been dropped out of it. He should be like without an upside down cup, really, without the cup on it, right?
I'd assume so.
But they don't do a purple milkshake. I don't know. Just moving on anyway. I'm sorry.
Moving on. Anyway, it's not going to be my top five because I've only just watched it. And for me, I feel a good film. He's one that you will go back and you will watch it. Like, I will watch that film again, but I need to leave it alone for a bit because you come out the other end and you're like, fucking hell. It's still now, there's still some of the imagery and it's horrible, like, especially at the end. But I do highly, highly recommend that. And I can probably send you a copy.
I've just Google imaged The Grinch. They've put him next to a butt plug and he's the same shape.
Okay. So yeah, I'm going to go with Split, but Brawling Cell Block 99, comes honorable mention. Very, very close, yeah. But Split, I loved Split.
Well, not to spoil it, because I know it's got a twist and stuff, because it's M. Night Shyamalan Ding Dong, but why is it good? I understand it's a sequel of sorts to Unbreakable. Is that correct?
Ish. But you wouldn't know that. If you leave the film 3 minutes before the end, you wouldn't know. You just leave the film thinking this was a tremendous, James McAvoy.
So do you think that's an afterthought then?
No,
connected to shared universe, Marvel.
Well, apparently, I'm not too sure on how it works, but apparently it's a plan. Look, Shyamalama Ding Dong's got this idea of how to do it. And it is a spoiler, because it is Bruce Willis shows up at the end.
Yeah.
And Unbreakable, I'd only watched Unbreakable for the first time like a week before seeing Split, without knowing there was any connection. So it was still very fresh. I went to watch Split, and James McAvoy's minting it. And M. Night Shyamalan obviously likes young girls, and I don't know if that's a thing.
That Michael Bay does as well, doesn't he?
He does. Michael Bay loves a bent over woman, doesn't he?
There's even that weird scene, is it Transformers 4, when he's trying to justify the young leads going out with a 14-year-old girl, and he's going, well, it's in certain countries in Europe, it's legal. There's some weird thing with it. Yeah. Michael Bay's got this strange jailbaity obsession.
In Split, it's very jailbaity, and you spent the first 40 minutes of the film with these really weird camera angles on these young ladies, and one of them's just in pants. You've got to take trousers off and get your pants on. It's okay. And then there's loads of shots of the main girl's cleavage. That's all right with that. That might be why it's my number five.
I look for. That should be the tagline. I'm all right with that. That's why it's my number five.
Yeah. But yeah, other than obviously gratuity.
That's a tip.
The Witcher.
Well, that's good. I'll put that on my list now. I'm writing down yours as they go. So I'm going to watch Brawling Cell Block 99, not Prisoner Cell Block H. That's the Australian women's prison drama from the 70s. My number four, my favorite film of 2017. Number four. This really is a jostling, really, between any point in my top five, really, because think it's kind of the most fun in a sense, even than another one I've got on my list. Take your guesses now, listeners. I'm going to say Kong Skull Island is my number four.
Really?
Yeah. Have you seen it?
No, but it's just come on Sky, and I am going to watch it.
I watched it thinking it would be crap, and I only did it so I could review it for my YouTube channel, which I'll put a link for you on Twitter, ladies and gentlemen. It's really good. It's a stupid film, but I liked it was literally monsters fighting each other. And I think Peter Jackson film went on for 3 hours and it was kind of very slow and laborious. This gets to the point, gets you to the island. Everyone has their mission and what they have to do.
Yeah,
it's completely ridiculous, but the special effects, the CGI monkey in it is great. Sorry, he's an ape. Yes, I know. Kong's amazing. The fights are awesome. John C. Reilly's in it, who's always good in everything he's in generally.
Yeah.
The only weak link, of course, as I said in my own review, that Tom Hiddleston was in it as the kind of the male lead. And I even said
like an action
review,
star, ain't it?
Trying to be.
Man. Yeah.
Yeah, it all kind of, because this is the same time, just before that, he was kind of dating Taylor Swift on TMZ and stuff. And I think all that was a massive publicity stunt to kind of make him look like this alpha male, sexy action
Playboy
star. Because he was going for Bond at around the same time when they were kind of thinking about other people maybe to be Bond.
Oh,
when Daniel Craig, I think this proves that as great an actor as he is, he's not really the action man type.
No, I wouldn't say so.
As an ex-SAS kind of soldier of fortune type character, I would have probably put Jason Statham in, someone like that.
Oh yeah,
mine with the accent, I don't care, Jason.
He's always good though, Jason Statham. He's reliable.
He's always him, but he's got that kind of charisma that most fit. Well, I mean, even saying that, he was in Lock, Stock as a non-actor, really. He was recruited because he was, I think Guy Ritchie saw him selling stuff on the street and went, just do that in my film. And weirdly, out of all those people, he's become this gigantic kind of niche movie star because he's just got the X factor, I suppose. And that's why I liked Kong. So, Toffer, what was your favourite fourth film of the year? Mine was Kong. Oh, you're back now. Sorry, we had to edit that bit out, listeners. He went to make a cup of tea.
I did. Right then, my number four.
Fourth favourite film of the year.
I don't know if it's going to come up in yours. Maybe because you just said something about most fun you had at the cinema.
It's about breakups, probably not.
But my number four is one of the funniest films I think I saw last year. I am going to go with Thor.
Oh.
I had a very, very, very good time at the cinema watching Thor. And I've watched it again. And obviously, it's not as funny. But even just for Jeff Goldblum, it's got to
As you've mentioned it, it was actually my number three. So we're crossing the streams now. I thought it was great too.
Yeah. I hated Thor 2.
I hated Thor 2.
So I went in I went in because Jeff Goldblum's in it. That's the entire reason I went to see this film.
Because of The Fly.
Because of Jeff Goldblum. I fucking love Jeff Goldblum. Because of Jeff Goldblum and every sort of bit of promotion Jeff Goldblum did was marvellous.
Because he just plays himself.
Yeah. Did you watch him on the Graham Norton show?
I sent it to you.
Why was he playing piano?
Because that's what he does. That's kind of his thing. He's a jazz musician, I think.
Every sort of bit of promotion he did, I was like, that's great. I mean, just for Jeff
Have you
Goldblum.
Seen his promotion of Independence Day Resurgence when he interviews himself?
No.
I'll send it to you.
Great. So yeah, I went and I saw it and I laughed a lot. I love the direction they've gone in because Thor's always been a bit
stoic and starchy and uptight. And I think that was the problem, I think, with the previous films. The bits that worked, I think, in Thor 1 and 2 were the bits in Asgard.
The fish out of water bit. Oh, no, I like the fish out of watery bits.
Yeah, but I think the second one became about Natalie Portman and she clearly didn't want to be in that film. She literally was phoning it in. It's just like, why are you bothering with this girl? And it was set in London and very dull looking. And it's like Asgard in the first one, it was a bit Flash Gordon-y, like the TV, the film, sorry, from 1980.
Yeah, that's not a bad show. Yeah.
Where it was very camp and everyone was in these big gold lame outfits and stuff. And I think they've kind of taken it to the next level in Thor 3. But I think maybe that's what they should have done from the start. But I think, I guess Disney didn't come to that until Guardians. That's what kind of changed them in a sense. And
I'd say so, yeah. So if Guardians wasn't a success, Thor 3 would have been another semi-serious film. It just annoyed me with Loki as well. Like, he was good. He was bad. He did it in this as well. Like, he's good and he's bad. I know he's supposed to be, he's the god of mischief. But, you know, he's getting like a bit Magneto now.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I think the Loki thing as well, like, he's done so many bad things now, you have to either kill him or get rid of him. It's just like, how many free passes is Loki going to get?
Yeah. I thought Carl Urban was good in this, though. I really enjoyed his character.
He was good, but I don't know, he seemed to have like a last-minute change of heart, a bit too last-minute.
Yeah, it was very, very last-minute. But, like, is it Korg?
Taika Waititi played by the director Taika Waititi from What We Do in the Shadows and Flying Conchords.
Quality. He's class. Piss off, Ghost. I can't do his accent. I sound quite posh when I'm trying to do New Zealand.
Yeah, my only criticism, I think, of the film really was more Jeff Goldblum. He could have had more Jeff Goldblum. Because he only did like two cameos and then he kind of was in at the... he's in the end credits.
Yeah, he did his audio sequence. At the end, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not a bad... No,
I can only hope he wasn't killed and talked his way out of that. Because I'd like to see him in the next film. Because he's actually the brother of the Collector who's played by Benicio Del Toro in the films.
He needs to be in every Marvel film.
Yeah. I don't think they realised. They asked him to come in and be Jeff Goldblum and then they kind of like... forgot that they had Jeff Goldblum and just gave him the scenes that he had instead of going, shoot, keep shooting.
Yeah, I bet there's loads of stuff that's just... Jeff Goldblum's still going on. Look, even the stuff in the film, you know that wasn't written for him. You know some of it was.
Yeah.
You can just tell when he's wandering off and he's doing his own thing because everybody around him's like, what? And he doesn't stop. He just keeps going. It's marvellous. Like, when we went...
Funny you've only just discovered Jeff Goldblum as well.
I'm so late, but I love him. Like, I went with Michael and Sean. From the Master Debaters. And Michael doesn't get Jeff Goldblum. He doesn't get him. So, like, when I'm saying, like, how much I'm looking forward to Jeff Goldblum, he's like, oh, do you fucking Jeff Goldblum shit. And then at the end of the film, I was like, well, what do you think of Jeff Goldblum? He went, I didn't really understand what he was doing. I said, that's the point.
He's meant to be weird.
You're not supposed to. He said, oh, he's too weird. I said, well, that's the point of Jeff Goldblum. You've got to get to the point where it clicks and you go, It was just in The Fly. No, it wasn't in The Fly. It was Into the Night.
Well, he wasn't really Jeff Goldblum in that, was he?
No, but like he was doing his little things.
Mm. I don't know. I think we discussed this on the Fly podcast, that like a bit like Al Pacino and Tom Hardy, when Al Pacino did Scent of the Woman and that got him the Oscar, and Tom Hardy did Bronson and that got him a lot of attention and defined his career in a sense, that from that point on, both those actors kind of turned up the Al Pacino-ness of the Tom Hardy-ness.
Yeah, the Christopher Walken-ness.
Yeah, so Tom Hardy is very much informed by kind of Bronson, I think, a lot now. I see in Jeff, I mean, you know, Al Pacino, but Jeff Goldblum now is like, hey, I'm Jeff Goldblum, doing that kind of weird windmilly hinge wristy things with my like pianisty type fingers, where I'm kind of reaching out for things that aren't there and pressing buttons in the air.
Yeah, he's always looking. So, you know, I think I said it in the episode, he's always looking for his keys.
Yeah, looks, I think,
he's always trying to find his keys.
Yeah, he's always kind of looking down at his pockets and like as if he's going to dip into them and stuff. But I think Jurassic Park was the turning point for that, with that crazy laugh he does on the engine helicopter. Yeah. Yes. So yeah, our tie for number three and your four respectively kind of is Thor Ragnarok. No, I liked it a lot. I thought it was really good. I think it's a nice direction Marvel's gone in, a weirder kind of direction. I think the highlights of that film as well were kind of which I thought was not going to work, the Talking Hulk.
Oh yes, yes, I really
like
enjoyed
Talking
that.
Hulk, I don't think I like this, but like in the actual film it was amazing. It was like, fuck, he should talk in every film. I think Hulk can carry his own movie now. Because they said that the longer he spends in that form, isn't it, he becomes more intelligent.
He needs somebody with him, though. He can't do it on his own.
No. But I don't know. He can play off things. Like, his Thor can be his fish. I mean, not Thor, but, like, the Hulk. If they do, I guess, another version of Planet Hulk, which they kind of touched on with this arena scene, they could do that, I guess.
I think that was the idea, wasn't it? And then they went, oh, nah, stick him in Thor.
Yeah. Well, I think on the strength of this, they might get some form of solo Hulk film or like a majority adventure out with him now, because the problem with Hulk, apart from the two-dimensionality of the character,
yeah,
Hulk is owned by Universal Studios. So that's why Marvel can't put him in his own solo movie, because they'd have to share the rights and the budget and the money's coming in, if you will, with Universal. They don't want to do that. And the legal loophole in the law, if they put him in as a side character, that's how they get away with it, basically.
Okay.
I don't know. It's a nice direction they're going. And I mean, for some reason, listeners, I didn't like, I liked it, but I wasn't kind of like, it's the best thing since sliced bread. Guardians of the Galaxy. I like
we'll
the second one.
We'll get to that.
I think they've hit the formula now with like weird and funny for me with Thor Ragnarok. So I'm looking forward to where they take it when, I guess, phase four finishes with Avengers 4.
Yeah.
After they've done Infinity War. So where they take it after there, I guess they can do Micronauts or Rom the Space Knight. So all the kind of weird off-brand B, C-list characters might be a way to go, like Ant-Man meets the Micronauts and stuff. So, yeah, I think it could be really good. Well done, Thor. Number three.
Yes, number four for me. So your three's Thor. So would that come straight back to me?
Yes, because we've kind of done ours together, if you will.
Well, this one's not going to be in your top five, but it's La La Land for me.
Oh, you fucking fuck.
I loved it. I adore this film.
Tell me why you liked it, and then I'll tell you why I liked it.
Because it makes me feel good. And I've got, the soundtrack is marvellous. I've got it in my car.
My only issue with it was... Here's my thing on it. I think it was really uneven. It wanted to be like this, like love letter to like Gene Kelly and stuff and old musicals.
Yeah.
But then they'd have bogged down in all this weird, like, I'm coming to LA to make it like the classic, I guess, musical sort. But then they kind of like get bogged down in all this like drama.
Yeah.
Like she's this starry-eyed girl and he's this miserable musician and they don't get on. And okay, that's fine. You're doing something different. But like there was lots of languid moments of like, God, this is dull. This is dull. And there's two really good, I think the opening number's really good, and then there's a couple of songs in it that are good, and all the romance between them when they're dancing up on
it's marvelous.
On Mulholland Drive looking over like LA and Hollywood, that's all cool romantic, but then it just drops again, and it either wants to be a drama or it wants to be this musical again. It's like I thought the tone was kind of too jagged.
But then John Legend comes in and sings an absolute tune.
I think I'm always in Lucky in Love, and you clearly aren't, because you're obviously happy and you've got children and an enviable life. maybe you see things differently to me, but I don't know. I just like...
Yeah, I see the good in people.
And I do. I think I see the good in people. I just... he was a dick. Also, Ryan Gosling, I'm still not sold on this guy. He's a strange-looking dude. And also, he sounds like he's got a cold constantly.
He's got the Harrison Ford effect. Like, he sounds a bit bored. Like, he's got that weird, laid-back, sort of douchey charisma where it wouldn't work in, like... I don't think it wouldn't work in, like, the early 2000s because you just go, oh, pretentious prick. But, like, became that time where it sort of... He's like the anti-Ryan Reynolds, isn't he? Because Ryan Reynolds is loud and he's full-on. And Ryan Reynolds...
Like me.
Well, I didn't want to say. But, like, Ryan Gosling just sort of chilled. He's like, yeah, whatever. Like, I love that he's not the best singer as well.
Yeah, I do. Yeah,
I think it works better that he's not the greatest singer, and he's.
I just would have liked more of the opening. Like, there were three good songs in it, and then the rest was just boring drama. Sure. But like, I don't know. Yeah, it was a miss for me.
Loads of bangers, loads of bangers. That John Legend one was a tune.
Listeners, if you do have an open heart and you have a spring in your step, and when you look at the sky, you go, "Oh, birds." I think La La Land will be for you if you're a cold-hearted cynic like me who's gone through probably the most harrowing 6 months of his life. even though the early part of the year when I saw La La Land, like, FM was going fine for me. So what does that tell you?
No, it's like that's the sweet spot for me. That is that sort of film. That's me all over. That is.
Maybe one day we can walk hand in hand through the hills of Gorner Wood, and I can go City of Stars, and you'll
I'd melt,
and I'll do that thing where I lean you back in that, like, that famous picture when the war's over and the sailors kissing that woman in New York.
I'd melt. I'll tell you what. I'll start packing a yellow dress with me everywhere I go.
Okay. Well, now you've done your number three.
Yes.
Or you've done your number three. Okay.
It's your number two.
So my number two, which I think will be your number two, but for different reasons.
Hang on, let me just double check what my number two is before you do that. I highly, highly doubt my number two. If my number two is your number two, right?
I know your number two is not my number two. I was saying it's going to be your number two, but for a different reason.
Oh, you wouldn't definitely.
As in, you think this is number two, okay. But I think it's number two.
Oh, my number one's obvious, but you definitely won't have my number two. If you've got my number two, I'll send you a picture of my bum hole.
You haven't, but I'm going to tell you anyway. My number two. I'm going to get crucified for this. My number two.
Go on.
My number two is Blade Runner 2049.
You cunt.
Click. Hello? Hello? Yes, folks. Denis Villeneuve's sci-fi opus from 2017, the sequel to the much-maligned masterpiece, I guess, Ridley Scott's 1982 film Blade Runner, is Blade Runner 2049.
Knobhead.
It wasn't...
Pretentious knobhead. You don't get extra points for liking Blade Runner, not in this podcast.
I don't really like Blade Runner 1. I think it looks cool, but it's kind of lacking in the story. Mm. I think I had a lot of problems with Blade Runner 2, but I thought it was eminently watchable. I wasn't bored throughout the nearly 3-hour running time. However, having said that, I think it was way too fucking long. And you haven't seen Blade Runner 1 or 2, have you?
And I never will.
Why not?
Because it's just, it's for me, it's...
How big's your TV?
I don't know.
50 inch?
It's just normal TV size.
What, 50 inch, big one? Is it big flat screen?
I'm not very good with inches, mate.
Is it as big as a movie poster like you'd see at the cinema on its side?
Possibly.
Okay, then you should watch Blade Runner, the first one, just for the visuals.
Fuck that. No, I'm too old for that shit now. I'm too old to be into films just for the visuals.
I thought Blade Runner 2049 was good. I thought production time was excellent. I didn't think they could make a good story of it. They kind of did. It was nice to see Harrison Ford. This is the main thing. Harrison Ford in the film, he actually looks like he gave a fuck.
Yeah, oh, does he actually care in this one?
He actually cares. He gives a performance, and he looks like he's in character, and he's happy to be on the set. A little bit like...
Does he do his weird run?
He's kind of like, I've got a bad hips run.
Yeah.
The one he's weirdly always had since Raiders of the Lost Ark. Yes, he does. He does, in fact, do that run. He gets into a fight that perhaps a man of his age and carriage shouldn't.
Didn't he chin Ryan Gosling as well?
I think he does. Mm. And I'm assuming it's a stomach, but he gets blown up. In the real world of Blade Runner, he wouldn't have survived. But no, I really liked where they took the story. It actually had a story this time. Mm. And Harrison Ford looked like he gave a shit. Ryan Gosling was in it, and I got through it. I didn't, wasn't that bothered by him. He's thin, long horse face, and he's close together eyes, a bit like mine. So
you're talking about it like you thought it was just all right. So why is it your number two?
Because now I'm actually into it.
No, it's because you're pretentious. That's why.
No, all right. It was number two, I think, because it was like a proper film, and I was engaged the whole way through.
Right.
Thor was like a light throwaway comedy Marvel movie, which I love. So that was number three. Kong either is a tie or a flip between two and three and four. So yeah, it's either Kong or. And Wolf Planet X is five. That was fine. A good drama with special effects and some subtext to it. Nice. But yeah, no, I really like Blade Runner. I thought it was really good. And the way it deals with kind of like love and loss and relationships and the nature of technology. I think that's what I kind of hooked into, because I was kind of in the middle of a personal crisis or the beginning of one anyway. So I think that's why it spoke to me. So yeah, as you've not seen the first one,
yeah,
or are willing to see this or the first one, I shall leave it up to the audience. Check it out, folks. It is nearly 3 hours long. It does not need to be that long by a country mile.
I haven't got time for that.
But the special effects are good. The performances are really good. And they actually had a story in this one versus the 1982 Ridley Scott original.
The problem, everybody rims out how good it looks. But like, that's not enough for me. It's not enough. Guardians of the Galaxy looked brilliant.
No, but you have to bear in mind this film is from 1982.
So is RoboCop. Or whatever that's from.
87. And that doesn't look that good. But that's kind of part of its charm. Come on, then. Well, when Ronnie Cox goes backwards out of that office block window with his extra long claymation arms.
Yeah.
Deck, you're fired. Thank you.
Right, my number two, and you probably, I highly doubt you'll have seen this. He's Paddington 2.
I haven't.
You want to feel, but I tell you what, it's probably not
the best. I've seen Paddington 1, and I thought it was okay.
Shut up. It's probably not the best time for you to watch it.
Because I need a bit of sparkle in my life, a bit of pixie dust.
No, but it is a beautiful film, and actually it might be the perfect time for you to watch it. Because
it'll just remind me of family and togetherness and warmth and being nice to people.
Yeah, that's
all the things I crave.
Yeah, well, you get yourself a little bear, mate, and everything will be all right.
Okay.
Yeah.
All I need is an animated bear. Listeners, make it happen.
It's not too much to ask, is it?
What's that, Bobo? Sorry, there's an animated bear talking to me. What'd you say? Oh, I don't know. Can you come out and play? Yes, I will in a minute. Okay.
It is a marvellous film.
And why is that?
Because it's just, it's lovely.
Who did you see it with, Sean or Michael?
I saw it with my son and my missus. And it was just, look, the first one's class. And it just, I don't know, Paddington's just really lovely. And I love, I fucking love that little bear. And it's,
do you remember the old cartoon?
Yeah. And it's just, I was more of a Rupert kid when I was little, though.
Okay.
But like,
I like the theme tune and narrated by Michael Horden.
But like, it's like when it came out and when people were talking about it, like I ignored it because I thought, oh, she's going to look shit. Like the bear.
Maybe that should be the theme tune of the podcast.
What?
The theme to Paddington.
I'm up for that. I'm up for that. But like, I thought it was going to look shit because like CGI in the film. I didn't think it'd be a successful film because it's a British film, and like there wasn't much buzz about it. I literally thought it just come and came and went, but it didn't. People really liked it, and people like you can't really find many bad things about this film, other than obviously Nicole Kidman because I don't like her. But that's the first one.
What's she doing in it? She's the baddie, isn't she? I remember she's in the British Museum at the end.
That's it, yeah. But like the bear looks dead good. Like the CGI on the bear, he's class.
And in the they've improved one, the bear. He looks real now. Okay.
And in the second one, it's just even better. Like Hugh Grant as the villain, and you think, oh, this could be shit for Hugh Grant. If this would have gone bad, it would have ruined Hugh Grant. But it was brilliant. Hugh Grant was class. He turned it up just the right amount of silly Englishman. And like he took the piss out of himself, and it worked. And
well, that's nice.
Obviously, the lovely story with the bear being lovely, and oh, it makes you feel warm, and it's like a nice cup of tea before you go to bed. It's just you just go. One of them.
Well, I'm glad you had fun with your family watching Paddington 2. You're a richer man than I. Well done.
I did. I really enjoyed Paddington 2.
Now, speaking of villains, turning it just up to the right amount, what is your number one?
My number one might be your number one.
My number one is Stephen King's magnum opus,
yeah, It. Boy, same's mine. My number one is It.
Now, I've only seen it twice at the cinema. So the second time, I was a little bit tired and bored, but I think the mistake I made was seeing it like 2 days after.
Okay.
So on the Friday on my own, I think, or the Saturday, and then I saw it the next day on the Sunday.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think looking back on it, and again, I don't think you could really adapt a film out of it because I think the TV shows like this, it's kind of not scary in that sense. I think a lot of the scares they rely upon, and they've mentioned this actually in the Red Letter Media thing of it. There's a theme in horror films now where they kind of take...
It's just jumping, ain't it? Just jump
it's scares. All jump scares and a screamy, shouty noise to make you be scared. And there's no kind of like that weird atmosphere that we've discussed and you picked up on in like Invasion of the Body Snatchers where there's something not right about that town. And it all kind of leads back to this awful kind of presence, which is kind of poisoning the place in a sense. Having said that, I thought it was really good. I loved watching it. And like I said, I saw it in Manchester with like a predominantly black audience. I don't know if it was like Black Coupon Night or something, but it was fucking brilliant because of that. They were so like interactive and screaming at the screen and stuff. I think that added to my enjoyment of the film. I had a great time. I was sitting like a
movie theater.
I don't
know if
I've
got to cut that out or not. I really don't.
No, not at all. It's fine. I'm from Dudley. Like everyone I know is not white and all my friends are like
that. You've got a black friend.
I'm not racist, but I did see It in Manchester with a predominantly black audience. No, I thought it was really good. I liked Pennywise. I liked the way he was depicted. A bit of this, some things that like they didn't do great, but I think the way they captured that kind of like kids growing up and awkward flirtiness and fancying a girl.
Lovely coming of age story.
A coming of age.
What did I say when we reviewed it? Stand By Me meets Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
And you can go back and listen. It's still one of our most downloaded shows.
Because you've read the book. In the end, do they like the film? Just beat him up with sticks and punch him and stuff? Because the only thing that fell apart for me was the end. They kind of beat him up. Went, we're not scared. He went, oh. And that was it.
I like that, though. I like that he got scared and he started panicking. And then like he was doing like his last ditch to scare him. Like he did little bits for everybody to try and get that last scare in. And I like that. I like that he was panicking. Yeah. It's good that he was just this big, scary thing that they were all terrified of. And at the end, when they all stood up to him...
So I think the best scare was like the headless burnt boy. That was good, chasing him.
Mm. The problem is with most villains in films like in horror films like this, is like they set him up like he's this unbeatable...
And then they beat him quite easily.
Juggernaut. And then they just go, oh, wow, that's how you beat him. Boom, dead.
Yeah.
It's like pretty much like Thor. Where she was this unstoppable thing, this unstoppable force.
But
like,
again, I don't know how any filmmaker would be able to depict that. So I don't know.
That's why I thought it worked for me, because he was this scary thing. But like,
it was as good as they could have made, I guess, an adaption of it, I think. I'm just looking forward now for the wrong reasons of whether they'll do the part two any good in a couple of years.
They will. But like... Obviously, he's this big thing that like they're all terrified of. They don't know what to do. They don't know how to defeat him. But they sort of work out, well, just fucking whack him.
Yeah.
Just wail him and see what happens. And they all gang up on him. They all beat the shit out of him. And they don't kill him. He just runs off. And I thought that was class. And that's perfect. Because like, now he'll come back and he will be worse. And he will do, like, he'll be a right little bastard to him. He was this time, but like...
Yeah, my only concern is in the sequel, if they probably cast Jessica Chastain and a bunch of big stars, it will take me out of the film. I think works, you didn't recognise any of the kids, apart from the Stranger Things kid. Although being good, he was from a recognisable pop culture thing, so you're like, oh, it's a movie. But
I don't know how they do it.
I thought the girl was great. She was like the best thing in it.
She was. She's got
movie star quality.
30-year-old nobodies.
Well, hopefully the strength of, I guess, the It brand, if you will enable them to do that. Because if you get fucking Matt Damon in it or someone like that, you go, ugh, no, this is not...
Well, have you seen that fantasy cast with Chris Pratt as...
Yeah, I mean, that wouldn't work. It's like, you're not thinking straight. It's like when they go, oh, we need a bald man. And so they go, oh, Patrick Stewart. Or like, we need Lex Luthor, Bryan Cranston. Why? Because he was bald in Breaking Bad. Like,
speaking of Matt Damon, though, Matt Damon's cameo with Thor was marvellous.
Oh, the score play looking thing.
Yeah.
So there we have it. Now, I've got four on my so-so pile.
Okay.
So
Let me see.
We'll rattle through them quickly, and then we'll get through to the worst.
Don't rank them. Just go through them.
Oh yeah, dude. There's nothing really to rank here. I mean, again, everyone raved about this film. Everyone said it was the best thing, and it's like the comic book movie, but it's like a drama. Yeah. It was a drama up to a point, and then it took a massive left turn. And I think the studio notes got involved and threw the entire film out the window. My so-so film that everyone raved about for 2017 is Logan.
Yeah, I've got Logan. I liked it. It just dragged for me.
Yeah,
and then I think they just killed Patrick Stewart, and it went
unceremoniously. And as soon as that happened, that's when the film went downhill. Up to that point, I was with the film, but not just because not for killing Patrick Stewart, but I just think he was like clone Wolverine. It was just like, oh no, they've turned into an X-Men film again. It's become silly and schlock.
It did get very X-Men.
But I think up to that point, it was this really good kind of family drama / road like. Movie where they were kind of learning lessons about life and love, become better people at the end of it, and all that got
one fine day.
All that got thrown out the window, and it became like a silly schlocky superhero film. And I think his idea was to have a drama, and then that was it. And then I think the studio went, "You need some action beats in this." Huh?
It's like a noir film.
Yeah, and then it just turned into fucking horseshit for the last half an hour. It's such a shame.
Yeah. Yeah, it does look like that. It looks like somebody stepped in and went, what the fuck are you doing? Where's all the action? Yeah. Where's the superheroes? And they just wedged them in.
Yeah. Sorry, Hugh.
Yeah, everyone's rimming him out. Going, oh, he deserved it. He's played Wolverine all these years.
Not very well. Good.
He's not. How are they going to recast Wolverine? Easily. Cast somebody who can act.
He's not Indiana Jones. He's not, I don't know, I'd never seen him as synonymously connected to the role as that.
No, I haven't either.
He doesn't have the Harrison Ford factor for me. He's a bit too fey and camp.
And I don't like his wife's ugly as well.
Well, what does that tell you?
Well, she's not ugly. She's just old as shit. And I know he's old. But he can easily be getting like a 21-year-old.
I don't know this for sure, but there is a rumour that...
Is he a gay?
Yeah, that's what they say. But who knows? We're not going to disparage Hugh. I like you, Hugh.
He does love a musical. Does.
But then again, so do you.
Well, what does that say?
I don't know. I like musicals as well. I love Moulin Rouge.
We were talking about pegging before we recorded, so I don't know what that really is. You know,
and neither of us have done it yet. I've had a finger in my ass, but that's a subject for another show. This next film for me was on literally walking the line between being swapped out for War for the Planet of the Apes.
I've got one of those. Yeah.
For me, I love this film. It was really clever, was well executed, well acted, all the things. It was kind of kept you guessing to the end till it turned into schlock again.
Okay.
I didn't even think of her, but yeah, she can be the seventh on the so-so film list, but we'll get to her. My thing I kind of liked, but it slipped into the... I quite liked it, but it was okay. Everyone raved about it. Get Out.
I've got Get Out, yeah.
I like the idea. It's like a Twilight Zone episode. Really clever. And then at the end, it just kind of went to shit. But I think I liked it. I think. I don't know.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Like, I'd say it would be like 7 in my list.
Yeah.
But like...
Yeah. It's not in the 5, but it's within the 10.
I will watch it again. And I have recommended it to people. But like, I would understand if somebody went, I didn't like it.
Yeah.
I'd get it. But I liked it. I thought the acting was brilliant. And... The twist, it was obvious what was going to happen. But I thought it was really good. I thought it was a really clever film.
And there we have it, viewers. Right, my other one, which you've just mentioned. Oh, what was yours? Do one.
Oh, yeah. Well, the two you've said are also in I've Got Wrote Down. But another one for me is Spider-Man.
Yeah, I was about to say that. That's my kind of in the middle of my list.
Spider-Man. It was good, but it wasn't brilliant. It's not as good as Spider-Man 2. Not for me, anyway.
Do you think that's because we've been oversaturated with Spider-Man films?
Possibly. I don't know. Michael Keaton. If Michael Keaton wasn't in this film, I don't think I would have enjoyed it as much as I did. For me, Michael Keaton makes the film. Even though Spider-Man's good, it was just a bit like Little Iron Man.
Yeah, I think what took me out was the kind of like he had all the Iron Man powers in the suit and he wasn't relying on his own wits really until the end, until he took the suit away. I understand why they did that, so he could take the suit away.
Yeah, but it was just like Iron Man light.
Yeah.
I don't really need that. And there was too much of his friend. There was too much of that. It was a bit long. It was far too long for a kids film.
I think it was falling into that kind of pandering thing where he had like an Asian friend who was overweight and stuff, and like MJ was like a black chick now and
she
stuff.
She was an issue for me as well because she was just an arsehole.
I thought she was hot. There was MJ, the mixed race chick, and then the black girl. Fucking hell, she was so hot.
There was the poetry girl. Yeah, oh, there was God. The one he took to the...
I put some cream in that coffee.
Right, that's Spider-Man then. Let's move on.
Spider-Man Homecoming. I put some cream in that coffee. Was it worth it? Podcast.
I have also a mention to Annabelle.
Creation, not seen it, but I understand it has a lot of problems.
It was good, but it wasn't brilliant. But there's a lot of... That's not one of them that people like rim out. Like, it's one of them, people either like it or they don't. I just thought it was good. I went to the cinema to see it. It didn't scare me or make me jump.
Yeah, we've mentioned it, but I think it's part of that canon of like Sinister and
loud
and
noises,
Creation,
yeah,
and Conjuring. It all seems to be made by the same people, the same style, and it's like screaming noise.
It's connected to the Conjuring, isn't it?
It's the spin-off, isn't it? But now there's a sequel to that prequel, right?
That's right. Something like that. Yeah, but I did enjoy it. But it's with horror films, the same as it. Like that's why it didn't make me jump, because it falls into the rhythm and like you can work out when it's going to make you jump. It's like an arcade machine. When people figure out the programming behind an arcade machine, they can crack it. Like with horror films I've sort of figured out the algorithm of a horror film now. So like, you know, it's not going to make it when they build it up. It's not going to make you jump. It's going to settle, then it's going to make you jump.
Yeah,
there's like this pattern that all horror films take. So Annabelle didn't make me jump, but I thought the story was good and the acting was dead good for like, because it was little kids again. But the main girl, the little blonde girl, she was dead good.
I'd like to see her in a few more films.
In about 10 years.
you have to sanitize all my jokes, don't you? Shame on you. My next film in this, I don't know, I liked it, it's really good, but it just feel like more of the same and it got quite monotonous, even though I liked kind of where they took it. John Wick 2.
I haven't seen it yet. I really enjoyed John Wick 1, though.
John Wick 1 was good. He had like a purpose for doing that. And the second one is kind of more like...
Does it just carry on straight where the first one left off?
Kind of, and it builds up the mythology in a sense that the Assassin's Creed, if you will, they're a bit like the Illuminati. It's like a secret group. You can't kill people in certain places. It's all done very gentlemanly, and like there's a code to it all, which is cool. I don't know, if I see John Wick like jump at someone's chest, wrap his legs around like he's sitting on a toilet, and then pull them backwards onto the floor and then shoot them in the head and another person. He just kept doing that so many times in the second one. It just felt like, oh God, give him some new moves.
Yeah.
But not a bad film. Still a very good film. Yeah, no, it's still a very good film. And Keanu's like great. He like every 10 years he comes up with this in a film that kind of like...
He's like Madonna,
you know? Yeah, he comes back every 10 years with like a groundbreaking kind of set of films, and this is his new, I guess, Matrix. And before that it would have been
Bill and Ted
after that, Point Break and Speed, then The Matrix, and then obviously like John Wick and everything else he kind of has done has not been a success in terms of reviews or box office. But now I love him. He's great. Yeah. It's a good film. It's a great film. It's just, I was just like, need to do something different. Or don't do something different. Either go completely different or just do the same, but it kind of fell somewhere in between.
I don't think it doesn't sound like it's a film you can watch back to back. Like one or two. Like you can't binge on them, can you?
No. It's not like Casino Royale and Quantum of Solace.
I've never seen those.
I want to strap you into the chair like the Clockwork Orange. Put your eyes in those things with like pipettes dripping water on so you don't blink.
Fuck,
and do like Blade Runner 1 and 2 and Casino Royale. In fact, no, all the Bond films.
Just drip feed me.
Yeah. No one's seen this. Only I have, I think. This is my next one.
Okay.
Have you done yours yet?
You've just done... What did you
John Wick,
do?
So what's yours?
Wonder Woman.
Okay. Yeah, I feel the same way. I've not got it on my list, but... Because it... Well, that says it all. It just went out of my head.
Yeah.
It was okay. It was good, and I think it's the right direction to take the character, but I would have rather have seen that Love Conquers All. No, Zod, the people! Kind of that I would have liked to have seen that in Superman. It just seems a bit like course correction on the behalf of...
Yeah, like Man of Steel, like they just gave him the rest of the Man of Steel script and went, just change it to a woman, it'd be fine.
Yeah, where he's kind of like love conquers all kind of thing and stuff. Yeah. And that would have been, that optimism would have been.
Hope, it flows like a river. Shut up.
There you go. Yeah. So, yeah, it was good, except for the end. It fell apart then. It becomes that kind of shitty kind of Zack Snyder in a like a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and there's loads of fire.
Mm.
And David Thewlis, who was Ares, was literally just David Thewlis in some armor.
Yeah, with his voice.
Like, yeah, like that David Thewlis voice. I'm in Naked by Mike Lee and stuff. And I know this isn't his voice, listeners, but you just bear with me.
It says something like that.
And he kept his like weird moustache. He looked like Viscount Palmerston. And I think even though everyone went after like Steppenwolf as being a CGI computer game character in the next one, which is also bad. But this token, they kind of went, he said regular man in ridiculous armor, and they kept his silly kind of cock duster moustache. So I was just like, I don't know.
Did you just say cock duster?
Yes.
I've never heard that.
Well, there you go. Put it in the lexicon.
Cock duster.
The thing I was going to mention, sorry, Wonder Woman, we'd like to say more about you, but I'm going to say Trainspotting too. Pointless. Didn't really make sense and was a bit rubbish.
I thought Trainspotting 1 was okay.
Trainspotting 1 is okay. It's got some iconic moments, but yeah, doesn't do anything. So skipping over that, as I have nothing to say on it, and you don't, you've not seen it. I actually had this on the mixed list, like I've just been doing, but I'm going to go and say my number 5 worst film of the year, as we're going to do on the worst.
Oh, let me squeeze in.
Go on.
Oh, it's probably going to end up on your worst, so I won't steal it from you. Go on, fuck it, carry on.
Go on.
Is Guardians 2 on your worst list?
No.
Oh, okay, Guardians 2 then. It was just, eh.
Yeah, I don't know, I kind of felt weird about the first Guardians. It was just a bit, everyone went so crazy for it. I was like, really? I mean, I appreciate it. And like, we're going to be doing an up and coming review, I think, on a trauma film that you've been requested to do. But James Gunn wrote and directed Guardians of the Galaxy 1 and 2. And he's like, he did Slither and Super and stuff. And he's from the trauma camp he wrote, I think, and directed Romeo and Juliet in the year 2000, which I think they wanted to cast me in. In the cross streams of time back in the day when I was at the Cannes Film Festival in 1999. And I turned it down because I was scared. I thought it was porn. Whoops. I just thought that was a bit meh. It just comes out shy of, I guess, the top 5 meh ones for me. But no,
People proper rimmed it out.
Yeah, they overdid it. I think the second one is better than the first one.
I'd say,
and I've only seen it once.
Better than the second one.
Kurt Russell.
I do like Kurt Russell in it. And like, I've watched it recently. And look, the CGI at the start is flawless. He looks like young Kurt Russell.
Yeah, Escape from New York Kurt Russell.
Yeah, they've done that really, really well.
Well, I've seen him in interviews when he said they just taped my face up and stuff and things. I was like, really? Come on.
You don't look that good, Kurt Russell.
Because Michael Douglas said that. He's just like, oh, there's not much CGI. It's like, Michael Douglas, you have had throat cancer. Yeah. You're 74 years old. You do not look like 1960s era or 89 era Hank Pym. You do not look like... You don't look like 1989's fucking Black Rain Michael Douglas. Yeah. I'm sorry. You're an old man. Just enjoy it. Come on. But he said the same thing, so maybe there's something to it. They just said, oh, they just taped my face back a bit. Like what? They taped your turkey neck into your ears and slapped a wig over it to hide the fucking Scotch tape. I don't know, but no, they did. It did look.
It just baffles me the fact that they can turn the clock back on Kurt Russell. Like what? 30 years? 40 years? Yeah. But they cannot CGI a fucking mustache. Right, Ethan. What is your social media?
You can find me on Facebook when I reactivate my account. So in the meantime, if you want to send me any dick pics or spicy memes, you can send them to Ethan McKinley, UK on Twitter.
Yeah.
My show Questionable is on YouTube. If you type in Questionable EMC, you can watch some of my film reviews and piss takes and interviews with various celebrities and people from around the world.
At Was It Worth It Pod on the Twitter. Again, as we've mentioned, we've been away, so we've been slightly inactive on that. But we are back at _MasterDebaters on Twitter if you want to follow that one. But we are back. We are going to do a minimum of 2 shows a month. That is the plan, to do every other
week. Well, maybe if we've done with Into the Night and the other fucking One Fine Day, if we split the show and see if you watch 2 films and then we do like... 20 minutes on each, maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
Is that way you'll get all your films through in the year? But yeah.
Well, I am committed to watching 100 new films. I've watched two so far. So, well, three technically, because I watched A Disaster Artist as well.
If you owned a Mac, I could give you all my films, which I've converted to MP4s now.
Yeah, so there should be lots and lots of content. I am going to be watching The Mist and doing that with The Three Cuckoos again. And Ethan, have you seen Jerry Maguire?
I have.
I will.
Oh shit! We were meant to do Jerry Maguire in like October or November, weren't we?
I've seen it now. Yeah. So that will be coming up with Ethan if he's up for it. And
I'm
Giles,
absolutely up for it. I've got nothing else to do.
Yeah, Giles from the Filmmakers Podcast. That should be coming up very, very soon. Right then, Ethan. It's been a pleasure.
It's been a fucking pleasure.
It's been a fucking pleasure. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Damn, that shit was dope.